Our true crime podcast deals with sensitive issues, including some that little ears shouldn't hear. Listener discretion is advised.
This is Cam.
And I'm Jen.
And you're listening to
Our True Crime Podcast.
So, Jen, what kind of case you got for me today?
I've got a cold case.
Ooh, cold.
Burr. I'm fascinated with cold cases. I know you really don't like them because they don't have the payoff at the end.
It bugs me. Yeah. I lay awake at night and think about it. I'm not kidding.
They absolutely fascinate me. I never understand why some of these cases that have a lot of information, how they end up being cold. I don't get it.
I think that's what bugs me. I just can't understand how come certain cases can be solved and some can't.
But the most important thing is to try to keep
the name out there and get it out.
Try to keep everything out there and to know. But I'm going to let you know of a case that I had never heard of, and I was even surprised to find out that you didn't hear of it.
I know. That's a shocker. I can't wait.
It is. And it even happened in our state, Missouri.
That I swear, I had no idea.
I found it only because as I was perusing Twitter, one of the people that I follow, which is Defrosting Cold Cases with Alice, had commented on this case. And it's a 45-year-old cold case as of August of this year.
Wow.
In the state.
I have not heard of it. I'm shocked.
I know.
Shocker.
Well, let's see if we can do it.
Get some interest in it.
Interest in it, or at least bring it into public view. Teresa Hilt was born January 6, 1951. She was the only child to doting parents Stanley and Mildred Hilt in Chillicothe, Missouri. Tess, as she was called, was known as a smart, outgoing, life-loving girl. She was always a high achiever, and she won many competitions for music, poetry, 4-H, and baton twirling. Remember baton?
Baton twirling.
I loved my baton twirler teacher. She was
Coach.
The majorette.
Yeah.
Yeah. Loved her. Wanted those white boots she always wore. Tess was also drawn to the arts. She loved music and she sang constantly. So she sang, played piano, and she also played the trumpet.
So she was arty.
Right. And she loved the stage and she was quite an actress. After graduating from high school, she went to Northwest Missouri State University. She had graduated in 1973 with a degree in music education, and she was also enrolled in the graduate programs leading to a Master of Science degree in guidance and counseling.
Oh, okay. So she's going to be a teacher slash guidance counselor.
Right. So she graduated from college, took the summer off,
right,
and then she was heading back for her master's, okay, right? She was 22 years old. Tess was, like high school, very active on the campus, and she was a member of the yearbook staff, the marching band, student union board, many music groups, and she also was, what, an actress. She played Peppermint Patty in You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown.
Oh.
So her friends described her as outgoing, beautiful, and a bubbly girl. She got along with everybody. She wasn't a drinker. And if there was a party situation, she pretty much just nursed one drink all night long. They said Tess was the kind of girl who seemingly didn't have an enemy in the world. She was a trusting soul and always saw the best in everyone, and that trusting nature may have led to her death. On the afternoon of Friday, August 3rd, 1973, Tess helped a friend paint his apartment, which it's a good friend to help paint because painting sucks.
Woo-hoo.
They both lived in the College Gardens apartment complex, which is now called Horizons West, and it was right next to the campus.
So probably lots of kids lived there.
Lots of action going on all the time. Yeah.
Okay.
And although they lived in the same complex, they lived in different buildings. The whole complex was considered very safe, and hardly anyone ever locked their doors, including Tess.
Is this in Maryville? What town is
Maryville, Missouri?
Maryville. Mm-hmm. Population? I'm just wondering about the.
It's a small college town. Well, it's 1973,
yeah,
too. I mean, I remember not locking the doors when I was being little.
Okay.
You know, I totally remember not locking the doors. After they got done painting the apartment, they also went out together to a party that night. And then they went back to Ed's apartment around 10 or 11. Supposedly, around 2 o'clock in the morning, Tess decided to go back to her basement apartment, which was only about 60 feet away from Ed's place. As she was leaving, two of Ed's male friends showed up. You know, Ed walked her to the door, and before they left, she made plans to go out with Ed the following day after he got off of work. And that was the last time they saw Tess alive.
Were his two friends with him when they walked? Like, did the two friends stay at his apartment and he walked her?
No, he just walked her to the door. Since he only lived 60 feet away from her apartment, she walked by herself.
Okay. Wow.
Back
okay.
to her apartment. It was 1973. I mean, just different.
I know. I'm just thinking.
Different times.
I'm just saying that's sad. I mean, only 60 feet. You could see. You know what I mean? That's weird. Somebody right was across. Obviously watching. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. So after Ed gets off work, he makes several phone calls to Tessa's apartment. He wanted to call her and say, let's go out, or what time should we meet up and all that kind of
plans.
Stuff. Right. Mm-hmm. But there was no answer at all. Oh, and by the way, Ed did show up for work that day, in case you were thinking that Ed did something.
I was kind of thinking that. I was interested to see.
I know. I could tell by the look in your eyes. By the look in your eyes. Another of her friends attempts to call her too, but get a busy signal. Mm-hmm. So at 5 p.m., after several attempts to call.
Was Ed getting a busy signal too?
I don't believe so. It just says that somebody else tried to call and got a busy signal.
Okay.
All right. So at 5 p.m., and he gets off work at about 4. Okay. So at 5 p.m., Ed decides to walk across the courtyard to Tess's basement apartment, and he can't remember if the door was open or just unlocked. But he walks in and he calls for her, and there's no response.
Okay. So he can't remember if it was ajar or unlocked? See, that's weird to me.
But she never locked her door, so...
Yeah, but I would be, you, especially, I don't know.
Well, what he sees next is pretty horrifying.
And that's why I think it would go back to go, oh my God, that door was open. Somebody got in here versus, oh my God, the door was shut and somebody
got
in.
But maybe she never really shut the door, or it happened
college,
before.
Like in dorms. Right. Kids leave their doors open,
right.
And
if it was
kind
safe,
of come in and
right.
out. Yeah. Okay,
all right.
Go ahead.
So since there's no response, he goes and checks the apartment, and he sees her lying face down, nude on the bed. Ugh. And she's covered up and she's almost like tucked in. He sees the heel of her foot sticking out, and then he touches her foot to wake her up, and her foot's cold. He contacts the Maryville Police Department that responds to the scene. So okay, before we go on, I just want to state that the police did everything that was in their knowledge to do.
Okay.
All right. This is a small town college campus, a small college town.
1973.
Small police department. They weren't really trained to do homicides. They really didn't have a lot of homicides to investigate, so they didn't have a lot of experience investigating.
Okay.
So I did read in a comment somewhere that someone stated the investigation seemed to be ran by Barney Fife.
Ooh.
Which isn't a good sign. But to be fair, the sergeant at the time, Jim Wright, he was assigned to the case after 2 months after her death.
What?
They didn't assign him to the guy that was...
Was somebody else assigned to it?
I couldn't find anything. So there's problems there, just to begin with. Okay?
Okay.
So they believed that the crime scene was staged. Her body had been posed, her left arm laid straight at her side, while her right arm was bent at the elbow, resting on her back. Remember, she was face down.
Yeah.
Right? A 4-inch paring knife was found in her right hand, but there was no fingerprints on the knife.
A paring knife is not very large.
No, it was 4 inches.
Okay.
So there were ligature marks on her wrists, indicating that she had been bound. And I read somewhere that she was bound with her own shoelaces. Ugh. She also had a pair of her own pantyhose tied around her neck, really tight. She had a black eye and bruising on her left cheek and upper arms. She had been stabbed twice in the chest, and it pierced her heart. Now, the chest wounds, even though she was pierced only twice, it looks like they had just jabbed the knife in about 8 or so times.
Like in the same spot?
They didn't even take the knife completely out of her chest, and they just kept digging in there. They never pulled it out completely, and they just restuck the knife, and horrible, up to 8 times, they said. Yeah. She was also stabbed 3 times in the left thumb, 5 times in the left arm, and numerous wounds in the lower part of her body around
the
uterus.
Like overkill. Ew.
Around the uterus area. Mm-hmm.
Oh.
During the attack, Tess swallowed some of her own hair. She had long blonde hair, found 8 inches down her esophagus. Her hair went down that far. She hadn't been raped. In fact, they stated that she was a virgin at the time of her death. She hadn't been raped, but there were signs that there was some sort of sexual related assault that had been done to her.
I think being stabbed in the uterus is pretty telling.
And there was also, she had a bite mark on her breast. Early on in the investigation, Sergeant James Wright, you know, the guy who was only put on the case 2 months after the murder, he theorized that it was a woman that killed Tess. Here's the fun part. It's so sexist in the 70s. I swear. One, Tess hadn't been raped. So all cases where a woman is killed, there's usually rape involved, right?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. He said that since she hadn't been raped, it tended to eliminate a man as her assailant. Which, there's plenty of cases out there. Yeah, right?
19, okay. Small town, though, you know.
But 45 years later, we know better. Number two, her apartment had been cleaned following the murder. Actually, they said when they walked in, it was clean. And she said it was too neat of a job to have been done by a man. The place looked like it had been cleaned after. Well, and he said that there had to have been quite a struggle. Given all the wounds to her body, it had to have been a struggle.
So that somebody did clean up the blood?
That's what they think.
Okay.
The killer had neatly folded a sheet and placed it over Tess, her body, and it was kind of tucked in. So, and he's like, no man would have done that. That's a feminine act.
Well, see,
we know that's wrong too.
Yes. I was thinking it's somebody that.
Remorseful, isn't it?
Yes. And obviously they took care to, they were embarrassed for her. So they would, you know, and that's somebody that cares for you typically. So this makes me think it was somebody that knew her and knew her pretty well.
Right.
Okay, keep going.
Right. So, another sign of a bungled investigation. This is fun, too. The autopsy results were delayed. You want to know why?
Oh, can't wait.
The Kansas City surgeon who initially did the postmortem, he did a little bit of it, and then you know what? He went on vacation. he took a 7-day vacation.
Are you kidding me?
No big
me?
Deal. I'm sure he had it planned. Can't lose that deposit.
Are you kidding me?
No, he then came back and then he finished the whole thing. So, and here it is. The autopsy report has never been released in full. So we really can't say the cause of death. And I've heard it was many, or I've read it was many different things. Of course, she was stabbed in the heart. The heart gets nicked, or it's usually always fatal. Another report said that the wounds to her lungs, since her lung was hit and nicked, that it caused the blood to fill her lungs, and she basically drowned in her own blood. Ugh. And then another report stated that she died of a collapsed lung. Even though the police said the crime scene was too neat, actually it said eerily neat, everything had been cleaned up, even the knife. They did find...
Was that knife that killed her, was that the one that was placed in her hand?
They think so.
Okay.
They think. There was some blood found at the site. There was a small spot of blood on the light switch. There was some on a wall. And there was a paper napkin that also had a bit of blood on it. Other things that they had brought into evidence, there was a lot of papers that they checked out, just numerous papers. One was a long list of names and phone numbers. They said it was a very long process, but each and every name was checked out and people were interviewed.
So it was in her apartment? Like she wrote this list or was it like?
Yeah, it was maybe like a...
You said she was on yearbook staff, so it might have been.
Yeah, or it could have just been like a phone book.
Oh,
like she had a piece of paper that was like a phone book because they didn't have cell phones that you kept all the names.
You had to write it down.
And people sometimes actually memorized phone numbers.
What?
Mm-hmm.
That must have been terrible.
Yep. There was also a bunch of audio recordings that they found because she liked to sing. So she recorded herself and all that kind of stuff. This is interesting. They found hair at the end of the bed. Now, they weren't Tessa's hair because Tessa had long blonde hair. These were short, dark hair. The strands of hair were examined. Mm-hmm. It was determined that the person who left the hair had a rare genetic disorder called, and I'm sorry if I said this wrong, I can't find a way to pronounce it, but it's called Menilithrix. And it's a rare genetic disease that makes the scalp brittle. And it causes the hair to easily break and fall out.
Okay.
It's kind of like alopecia, and it might be in the same genetic category, but the hair would be patchy and thinning. It's almost fuzzy. And actually, they said the strands of hair looks like a string of pearls.
Okay.
I'd never heard of it before.
I've never heard of it either.
Right. But
I have a question right now. How many patchy haired college students, I mean, how many people could really have this condition at a college and they can't find the person who did it? Are you kidding me?
Well, they might not have sought treatment, or they might have done stuff to cover it up, or it's so rare that you would just think, oh my God, that person has really bad hair, or they kept it cut really, really short.
Yeah, but you just know that. Like, you're sitting next to somebody. Wouldn't that occur? That would be...
Or people are too scared to come forward?
No, I'd be like, I'm sitting in my psych class, and there's a guy that has hair like that. Or there's a girl that has hair like that. Okay, go ahead.
So, anyway, even in today's world, there's not much you can do about it. There are some treatments, but...
Is it obvious? Is it an obvious condition?
I've seen some pictures of it. I couldn't tell the difference if I...
Oh, okay.
It just looked like you have bad hair.
Okay.
You
fuzzy
know,
hair. Yeah, okay.
Not actually fuzzy, but it just looks brittle and it look. Okay. I'll post some pictures of it on our website. Other evidence that was found were traveler's checks that Tess had used that summer to go to Colorado. She went to Warrensburg, Missouri.
Go Mules.
And they were found in the apartment's complex in the parking lot, Southside parking lot.
How much longer was this found? 2 months later when that?
No, that was found that day.
Right away. Okay. Right.
It was found right away. And they also found her wallet, which was on the south side of the apartment building too. And that was by some defunct railroad tracks.
Did it have money in it and stuff?
No.
Because, you know, that's weird because traveler's
not that
checks
I know of.
Are money too. Like, the person could have.
But they're harder. They were harder to cash. You had to show ID.
I don't remember. It's been a long time.
Mm-hmm. This made Sergeant Wright theorize that maybe Tess had met her killer during the short walk between Ed's apartment and her apartment.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe she didn't really go back to her apartment afterwards.
Like, maybe she never made it home?
Right.
Okay.
There was a witness that was seated at a picnic table in the courtyard where Tess would have walked through. And he didn't see her. He never saw anyone.
Okay.
Or he never saw her, I should say.
Yes.
So he thinks that maybe Tess met somebody on the way home, and she either willingly went with them or somebody followed her home.
Mm-hmm.
Wright has been quoted saying, I think she was brought back or she went back to her apartment where the murder took place. The murderer could have been somebody she knew because no one heard an outcry, and those apartment walls are really paper thin.
Mm-hmm.
And they did go on to test the walls, and they were
could hear stuff.
You could hear like a conversation. Anything? Nobody heard anything.
Okay. I'll save that for the end.
Right before Tess was murdered, her mother had visited Tess on campus. Tess had shown her this thesis she was working on,
mm-hmm.
and it was huge. It was a huge file. It was about an inch thick. That was missing.
The thesis was gone?
The thesis was gone.
Did anybody ever present that or turn it in?
Police never took it into evidence. And when her parents came to pick up her things after the crime scene was released, how mm-hmm. sad would that be? Oh, my God. They never ran across it.
That's weird.
Well, here's what's really weird. You know, Tess wasn't a drinker or a big party girl or anything like that. I mean, she was
yeah.
the friendly girl, would always go to parties, but she wasn't
right.
a party girl. The paper was about drug and alcohol culture on campus and in the northwestern part of Missouri. So her parents suspected that the research is what actually ended up causing her death.
See, that's I was.
They wondering, think that maybe she named somebody.
I was just going to say, did she name names in there?
Maybe somebody important that didn't want their name to be
a professor or
stated
somebody,
and they wanted
community?
To hide their addiction. They didn't want to get in trouble. Yep.
Wow.
Okay. Some have even speculated a drug dealer, mm-hmm. and it was known that his father had a lot of money.
Oh.
And a lot of connections to government officials in the area. That's one theory. Hearsay theory, but
yeah.
not one for the police that I know of. They said that Tess spoke to a lot of unsavory people. It's even said that Tess befriended a group of hippies that had been seen around the campus. She was so sweet that she would feed them.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally she would even let them stay in her apartment. But the police never found that group to interview. And
really?
It was, I think it was 2 men and a woman. Remember how I told you they found a bunch of audio recordings of Tess singing
uh-huh.
and everything?
Yeah.
They also came across one that Tess described this man and mentioned that she didn't really like him, that he was really poorly groomed and he always pawed at her. It seems that some reports had come that kind of described this same man that
uh-huh.
Tess had seen. And the guy was 6 feet tall, well built, but he had black greasy hair and he always hung around the apartment complex.
Ew.
Yeah. They did find out through a thorough investigation, it said, that the man was a teacher from out of town, and he had been attending a seminar, so they ruled him out.
Did they take a test of his hair?
But he did have, they said black, greasy hair, so it would be dry and brittle if it was. Oh. By February, 200 people had been interviewed. 150 fingerprints had been taken in hopes to match the prints that were found in the apartment. They also rounded up 6 people to take a lie detector test, including Ed.
Hmm.
But here's something that's fun. Interesting enough, there was one student who was asked to take a polygraph test and said no.
Deny.
Mm-hmm. And there is a little newspaper article on it, and they only named the person, the student. There's no gender stated with the student.
Didn't say why that they the person did not want to take it.
The reason the student gave was it was too time consuming, and they didn't feel that they had anything to add to the investigation.
Okay.
And as we know, lie detectors, polygraph tests, they're not admissible in court of law. You should probably never really take them, but you should get a lawyer first before you deny one. I would.
No, that's what all my people tell me.
But in the article, the police stated, this is fun, right? 4 reasons why the student could possibly not want to give the test. 1, person doesn't know anything and doesn't want to take time for the test.
Okay, which is what they stated, right?
2, the person knows something about tests, but not the murder and doesn't want to get involved.
Okay.
3, person does know about the murder, but wasn't involved and doesn't want to talk about it. 4, person is directly or indirectly involved. Seriously, what the hell?
Okay, I think that pretty much sums up every single option. There isn't any. You either did it or you didn't.
With highly, highly reported murder cases, there's a lot of prank phone calls,
false leads.
People were worried. They even had a letter from a man that confessed that he had killed Tess.
Really?
When they went to check up on him, they found he couldn't have murdered her because he was in a mental institution at the time. Oh. Police also investigated a possibility that Tess may have been involved in a relationship with an older man, maybe a professor. She reportedly told friends that she was in love with an older man while telling others that she was afraid of an older man. In both instances, Tess refused to name the older man. And despite researching for this mysterious guy, investigators were never able to come up with anybody. With a name, with a man, nothing.
It's so weird, though. That just seems like, we've talked about this, how women talk. Like, you would think somebody would be like, I met somebody. Mm-hmm. And then, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, go ahead.
Stanley and Mildred were asked what they thought of the investigation. They really didn't know how to feel about it. They didn't like the way it was being handled.
I'd say so. The hair is the clue. I'm telling you.
I know. They weren't always kept up to date with what was happening. And they really felt that even though the officers were trying really hard to solve the case, they didn't think the investigation was going in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
So they hired a Kansas City attorney to investigate the situation, but he didn't come up with anything either. And he finally told them that all you can do is keep praying that they find the killer. So they even put up a reward that was close to $3,000. And in 1973, that was
That's pretty
large reward. Nobody ever claimed it.
Hmm.
So with that, it went cold. There was nothing.
It's the hair. I'm telling you.
It is the hair.
This seems
especially
like
in this day and age.
Easy thing. Easy way to solve it.
There hasn't been a lot of information on Tess until 2012. And that's when a college friend of Tessa's, Mike Holmes, he retired. And it said he and his wife were sitting in a Mexican restaurant. And his wife is like, so what are you going to do now that you're retired? And he's like, you know what? I think I'm going to solve the murder of my friend Tess.
Yay!
Isn't that nice? And he states this because he said Tess was the very first person he met his freshman year in 1970 at college. She said she greeted him with a huge smile and asked if she could help him,
aww,
which is awesome. He and Tess became friends that year, and they were pals, and that she was a small girl with a big laugh. And so he created the Teresa Sue Tess Hilt Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a place where people can share their memories of Tess and remain up to date of the case.
Mm-hmm.
He also set up a website, which is justicefortess.com. and it catalogs all the information of the murders. He also set up a place where you can do confidential tips. Since starting the site, Mr. Holmes said they've had a ton of tips and information have come in, much needed.
Yes.
And honestly, there was such a small, there's not a lot out there on her. So this was much needed. So he said there's six types of people that they need information on. If anybody has any information, they need to say something. The first one, an older man.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they said in the last months of her life, she talked to friends about an older man. They have reason to believe that this man may have been married or was in the process of a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Now, number two kind of goes along with number one, jealous wife or girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
The jealous woman. Several leads have pointed to a possibility of a classmate or student who was obsessed with a young man, and that young man could have been attracted to Tess.
I don't buy that one.
Drug connections. She found out something more than she should have. There's not a lot to go on that.
Mm-hmm.
There's the man that she pushed away that wouldn't take no for an answer. You know, those folks.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of put out or get out, he says. Because of the rage. There was so much rage.
Right.
Right?
Right.
The drifters, which of course were the hippies.
Mm-hmm. Darn hippies.
And somebody has to remember the hippies because they were very prominent that summer.
Right.
Something that I found interesting, and Mr. Holmes shared it on the Facebook page, was he received a private message from a retired police officer.
Ooh.
With permission, he posted it. Well, this retired police officer mm-hmm. said that he couldn't buy that the killer was a woman.
Me neither.
Because first off, he couldn't see a woman overpowering another woman without signs.
And lots of,
struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Like there'd be paper all over the place.
Yep.
The two women fighting, it would have been a cat fight. Things would have been broken. People would have heard it.
Yep. I totally agree.
Right? His thoughts that after she left the party or after she left Ed's house, mm-hmm. that she didn't come home because that man never saw her. He is pretty sure that someone followed her or mm-hmm. she was met by somebody she knew.
Mm-hmm.
If she was followed, she went back to her apartment.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't lock the door as normal. She gets in the shower, and the person enters her apartment while she's showering.
Mm-hmm.
And he either strikes her in the face with his fist or stuns her somehow and knocks her out
mm-hmm.
because of all the bruising on the facial area.
Mm-hmm.
And it would also explain why she was naked. And as she was out, he puts her on the bed, then takes the pantyhose and gags her, mm-hmm. which causes the hair to go down her throat. He just believes that she knew the killer. So the killer was somebody that had a strong feelings towards her. She might not have returned
the
love. Yeah. Basically, he thinks that because of, like we said earlier, by the fact that he covered or the person covered them.
Yep.
He said it could be construed as a type of worshiping because of the cover up of the sheet covering her up.
Right.
Also states that the person had an anger issue and he couldn't control it because of the rejection, which leads this retired police officer to believe that it was a married person in jeopardy of being found out.
Right.
And she threatened
to tell the wifey.
To tell the wife, and which put him in jeopardy. So he got mad and he didn't want his wife to find out and he couldn't let it happen.
Mm-hmm.
The paper had also said, which I admit that I didn't catch this part, that something had been weighing on her mind for several weeks and nobody knew why. So obviously, I guess Tess was very private.
Yes, if she was writing a thesis, that is like all consuming. So
right.
That could have been all of that too. You know what I mean? Just kind of stressed out.
He also thinks the traveler's checks that were found in the parking lot in her billfold, he thinks that the killer took it. And as he was walking away, he was looking for articles that may
incriminate him.
Okay. Like possibly pictures or a phone number.
Mm-hmm.
The case is still being actively investigated, despite the case being 45 years old. Two officers have picked up the case, Ryan Glidden and Keith Woods, and they've sorted through all the witness statements and all the old police records.
Mm-hmm.
It seems, though, when they went to go look for the physical evidence from the crime scene,
mm-hmm.
it was gone.
What do you mean gone?
Completely missing. The bed sheets, the murder weapon, hair samples, DNA, it's all gone. It vanished.
See, they could totally find DNA on that now.
They could.
What?
I mean, it could totally be solved now, but everything's missing. Many of the people that worked on the case have passed too. So these two gentlemen have traveled to many different states. They've listened to thousands of hours of listening to these witnesses' stories, but all the stories that he's finding are community stories, like maybe gossip.
Yeah,
none rumors. Of it can actually be corroborated with things that are in the official police report.
Mm-hmm.
He's investigated everything possible, even serial killer, but those turned out to be inaccurate. Glidden and Wood both believe that Tess was killed by a single person and likely somebody that she knew, of course, which I believe you and I can come into agreement with that.
Yes.
But they are open to other possible ideas. There's a $15,000 reward that's being offered for information leading to the arrest and conviction of Tess's killer. So anybody that has the information is encouraged to call Glidden or Wood at 660-562-3209 or email information to tipsfortess@aol.com.
What do you think? I have a theory.
I don't really know. I would, my heart says, since the thesis was missing, that it might have something to do with the drugs and alcohol in the campus. And you think?
Well, they never mentioned that that person could be waiting for her inside. Number two, I think covering her up means that they knew her and kind of felt some remorse after they committed that. I think stabbing her in the heart and the uterus is very telling. I think it was somebody that not only knew her, but had feelings for her or vice versa. I think going back to the thesis thing, I think that's odd that that was gone. And if you go back to maybe she was dating a professor, maybe she got some information from that professor. He said, you can't put that in there. She said, yes, I am. And it might have just escalated into a fight.
Well, and it also could be that somebody that she interviewed for this paper developed a crush on her.
Yes. Yes. I think the crime was pretty vicious.
It was really vicious.
But a lot going on with the pantyhose and the shoestring and the punching
overkill,
and all that.
Maybe?
Yes,
yeah.
Totally. So
there was a lot of rage
but
to
hair,
that murdered.
The hair's the answer.
The hair is the answer, but it's gone. They can't find it. They don't know if it's somewhere in Jefferson City, in a warehouse somewhere, just sitting there. It's
this,
gone.
This is a totally solvable crime.
It is. They just need to find that evidence.
Mm-hmm. And I think it was probably a one-time deal, too. And that's why, just because I think...
Passion killing?
Yeah. Just, you said sticking the knife in the heart, so it wasn't... rage, but that also tells me maybe like when she was punched, maybe she passed out, because to stick it in the heart and keep going, they had to
in and out, in and out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, well, the fact that there was no sound, that no one heard anything.
That's why I'm wondering if she passed out when he punched her.
Oh yeah. Like the retired detective said that she was somehow stunned, whether it be by a punch in the face or some other thing.
Yeah.
And I agree with that because there's no way. I'm sure she was a fighter.
But I think also too, I'm trying to put myself in that spot. God, ugh. I think probably you would scream more out of control if it was somebody you didn't know. Because a person that you did know, I think it would be more like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Not scream.
But the police even said that they tested the sound and you could basically hear that there were conversations going
on. But if you're sleeping.
But they didn't say, that's true, but they didn't say that you could actually hear the conversations. You just that you could hear that there were conversations.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. Like, that would be, if there was a stranger that broke in your house, I think typically you're going to scream louder and more violently than it would be if I was at your house waiting for you. You'd be
right.
Like, what are you doing here? Like, you'd be surprised, but you're not going
right.
to scream at me. So it kind of indicates.
I would probably scream at you.
You would.
If it was 2 o'clock in the morning, yeah.
Yeah. But you know what I'm saying? So that
no.
just kind of leads me to believe that they knew each other. Like, they had to. I just
if they were in the apartment. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think being stabbed in the uterus, there's something personal there. Because
right.
when you're, if you're really going to go kill somebody, you know what you have to do. You have to hit a major organ, right?
Right.
And also, has to be a man.
But she had, like, stab wounds in her arm, too.
That could have been defensive wounds, though. That might have started if they can't say which happened first.
That's true.
You know? Because,
yeah,
I mean, that heart would have knocked her out pretty quick. So I would say that the other stab
yeah,
wounds.
if she would have gotten, if the stab to the heart would have happened, she would have gone quick.
Mm-hmm.
If it was anything else, it would have been a slow, painful death.
Right.
So,
and I think also, I think that if it was a woman that did it, it would be with a gun. I just have to believe that.
But in 73, you think? You think?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, you know,
I just don't think
because Missouri has that. Somebody once said that Missouri has, instead of the Show Me State, it should be called Shoot, Shovel, and Shut Up.
Well, yeah. I just don't, because I think that's too risky. If you're going to go and fight with somebody, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You want to end it. And that, if you were pretty comfortable with the fact that you could take a knife to somebody and you were going to win, that tells me that the person's bigger than the other one. And
another thing that leads me that it could be a woman is if the hair disease that she had, mm-hmm. she could be wearing a wig to cover up the patchiness.
So they wouldn't know her. Yeah, that's true.
Right.
If I had some information, I'd rather be like, hey, I'm going to tell you this, do with it what you will, but now it's off my chest and I can sleep at night.
No, I totally would turn anybody in. And I
wouldn't turn you in.
Oh, I'd turn you in.
Thanks, Jen.
Yeah, I'd turn in my kids. I'd turn in my husband.
You would not turn me in.
Yeah, I would.
No, you wouldn't.
I'd visit you and I'd maybe make you a cake with a file in it.
Thanks, Jen.
But I'd turn you in because I couldn't live with myself.
You always say you'd help me hide the body.
Well, I'd help you hide the body, but then I'd turn myself in and get immunity.
Wouldn't you just try to talk me into turning myself in?
No. Because there might be a reward.
Whatevs.
No. Anyway. So anyway, right. That's the case.
That was good. It was interesting. It's totally solvable, which bugs
totally solvable.
Me. Bugs me. Those bugs me
totally.
So,
so I wish all good luck to Mr. Holmes and the police officers.
Tell us where all the links and all the information that you found will be on our webpage. And where else can the good people out there find us?
Our Twitter. You can find us on Twitter. Our handle is at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com.
And check out our webpage.
And check out our webpage, or www.ourtruecrimepodcast.com.
My kid tells me it's so uncool that we say the www. Well, here's you don't have to do that anymore, she tells me.
But here's the deal. If you don't do it, you don't get put to the website.
Hey, I'm just saying. All right, buddy. Thank you. Thanks for listening.
If you like this episode, please leave us a 5-star review. Actually write something out too, and let us know, and we'll send you a little something something for doing so. Also tell your friends. Word of mouth is awesome.
Also, if you'd like to see us cover a case, just drop us a line and let us know about the case, and we'll do a little legwork and see what we can come up with.
Or if you want to do the legwork, that would be even better.
Yeah, just send us what you want us to say. That'd be great.